look at the minutes from last month.
Make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Second. Any discussion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, carried. We have a couple people that are going to be here today. I don't know if they're all on his way.
Did you hear anything from me? I passed my cat.
Yeah, didn't hear anything from Rich, so.
You know what it is, I think I know the shortcut. I think he's actually a little ahead of me, but yeah. He doesn't know to take Carmel Chandler Drive.
Right. Bust it through it. So we'll just go into resolutions and we'll start with 95, which is setting public hearing on proposed local law prohibiting the possession and distribution or use of tobacco products by a minor. This was, yep.
I'll move it up for the fact that it moves helpful.
This came, if you remember, this came from the last of us, but it was postponed. There were some questions that people had. We felt a little uneasy moving forward without those questions being answered, so we have a sponsor with us tonight. Our good friend, legislator T.J. Frink. So if you guys want to open the discussion.
I think we did.
We already did. Okay.
I have a question.
Yep.
All right, so in Section 5, all the strikeouts, is that since last month?
Yes. What happened was Jay had all the different attorneys look at it, and, I can't see. The one attorney, like, who was, has had estimates writing these types of things. I don't say these types of things, but like juvenile kind of things. And this is what they recommended to do it this way, to get rid of the notion of essentially telling judges we should, setting the parameters of what they should give. It's my understanding, all the attorneys are looking forward with it, with the writing as it is. So, yes, this is the change that I've got.
I have another question.
Sure.
So right now, in Ulster County or in the state, the state is 18 to buy. Now, do they have the same type of punishments for a 17-year-old kid who gets the possession of, illegal possession of tobacco by a minor or whatever?
There is no law.
All there is a state law that says you can't sell cigarettes to anyone under 18.
Yes.
Okay. So why then do we want to add penalties? We discussed this a little while ago. I'm all for raising it to 21.
Okay.
But the illegal possession of alcohol by a minor, that's under 21. It's the same type of thing. You get, it's a violation, you have to go to court, you probably first offense get ACD to do something like community service or, just like this. So, it's just going to, is it going to clog our town courts? Because this is such an addictive drug. Right. I'm a former smoker, and a lot of people are it's highly addictive. How are we going to stop underage kids from possessing cigarettes?
Well, I think that's a good question. And if you look at this, it gives many parameters, fines, community service, and/or they're looking at participation in the tobacco education program. At the end of the day, I guess the way I would look at it is that currently a six-year-old can stand on the street, as we spoke earlier, a six-year-old can stand on the street corner smoking a Camel and have a pack of Camels in their pocket. And a dang thing anybody can do, except when he puts the cigarette out, then they can get up for littering. So there is no mechanism at this point in time to stop that child. And most children, I'll say, that's the best way to say it, whether they're underage drinking or use of tobacco, they're copping up on somebody. They're copping a beer out of the refrigerator from their parents. They're copping a cigarette from the whomever, their uncle, their aunt, their mother, their father, whatever the case may be. But at this stage, there is no negative consequence for that negative behavior. And that's why in the penalty phase, if you will, you know, the way it's written is, you know, broad scope for the judge to render a decision. And, you know, the hope is that with some negative consequence, it perhaps makes the child think about it. But it also may have the parent be a little more conscious of what's going on, because there's, you know, oftentimes I hear about children that smoke and say, oh, you know, my parents don't know. Well, I don't, unless you have no nose, I don't know how anybody can smoke a cigarette coming to your house and your parents doesn't know. But like I say, alcohol products, if you're under age 21 in possession, there is a law for that. And so my hope is that this gives the policing agencies an opportunity to visit the violation, to then that child gets referred over to the town court, and the judge can make whatever decision they want to make.
Well, I'm going to support the publisher. I'm not totally committed yet.
Well, I appreciate that.
No, that's okay.
Did you get the sheriff's input?
I did not.
That would be really one of my only concerns, is that I would hope that considering what we've been dealing with throughout the county and New York State as far as you know, the addiction issues and yeah, the heroin epidemic, that this doesn't divert resources. You know, that if the sheriff's okay and they can multitask and, you know, be able to enforce something like this, and that it doesn't infringe on the other multi, you know, the tasks that they're doing already. Yeah, I think that would be important for me to support it as well, to know how the sheriff feels.
Okay.
About it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll see him tomorrow night anyway, with law enforcement tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, but it's, I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I think it acts as a deterrent as well, if parents and their kids know that there is possible consequences. You know, it could have a positive effect that way. But I will absolutely support the public hearing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I like the amendments that you made.
Just like 100.
Approaching 100 hours of community service seems like a little excessively punitive. You know, put it mildly, because you're kind of conversing like where would the resources come from, the supervision of that lengthy of a community service type of sentence, you know, for that many hours. So I think, you know, I think you're, what you did with it is something that's very manageable.
I do know that, well, when I look at community service, we're lucky enough in Ellenville and town of Washington, we do have a gentleman that's in charge of community service hours and reports back to both the village and town judges. So a lot of times when I look at community service, I'm hoping that most townships would have something like that. But so that's why a lot of times I come from a community service standpoint, because we have it in our community, as well as it doesn't cost anybody anything but time.
Right.
But if it is a resource drain in communities that don't have that type of setup, then the changes work even better for those folks.
Mm-hmm.
And it still allows the judge discretion, which is really tough.
The county does have a program. It's like a, I don't want to call it alternative sentencing. You know what that program's called? Is that where the county takes them out of the band and they do the initial I feel probation? Yeah. I call it the chain gang in a way, because they get, if the kid goes up to Golden Hill or wherever, get in the band, and they go out to parks and clean up. And I noticed just, not this last snowstorm, but the one before, that the county had the crew out in front of the Fort Union Cemetery shoveling the sidewalk, which was actually a good community service, because we have a local one.
Summer we had
no fun to do before. So there is a program already. And I know at my town, they did, they were doing something like that, a pilot program. I don't know if they still do that or not, because when you go to the town court, unless you have a program in place, it's the ADA that's going to be there representing the county, and they're going to throw them into that. But yeah, I support the public hearing.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Back to you.
Okay.
I'll
see you all. I'll see you all. Okay. Alrighty. How should we do? Should we move on with the resolution? Should we pause for a second and Let's do the second one that way. All right, the resolution 148 is approving execution of contract max $50,000 with Central Medical Center, and this is for pathology services.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Discussion?
Sure.
Yep.
We're doing a lot of restructuring at the medical examiner's office this year. Late last summer, we received a notice that the pathology group that we had under contract for 10 years was going to terminate the contract. The pathologist was out of Rensselaer, and he would come down here to do autopsies. And when he was away on vacation, he would, you know, they would have a film in his practice with provide coverage. We did that for many, many years. What we put in place was an interim step where we identified a contract pathologist. We switched to a new lab to try to speed the process a little bit. And then when we budgeted this year, we weren't quite sure how it was going to work out. So what we did is we budgeted a pathology position and then the various pieces to go with that. And you earlier in the year had authorized, or in late December you had authorized a contract to keep the contract firm going. The problem was that was an interim step. It wasn't a solution. What this is we've rolled it all into one contract, all the various pieces. This basically summarizes when I gave you the count up at the top of the expenses then. It's a lot different world than it was just several years ago. And we expect to do about 150 autopsies this year through our medical examiner's office. So what I showed you was basically what we kind of had earmarked in the budget and then kind of what this contract does. So what we've done is we've taken essentially what we had budgeted as a salaried physician with benefits in three separate contracts and rolled it all into one contract. So the number might look large to you, but when you compare them all, you see it's about $100 more per case for our budget making. And what this does is we'll continue to do the autopsies at the morgue at Kingston Hospital. Westchester Medical Center will provide the pathologists to do that work. They will also, instead of us, the way it was under the former contract with Dr. Tickerick is that he would send specimens to the lab, the lab would then bill us so that we would pay. We rolled that all into this contract. Essentially, Westchester Medical Center will order, their pathologists will order the labs, they will pay, and then we'll pay them in one summary, pay for the service. Mm-hmm. And they'll also provide the backup coverage. You know, these pathologists tend to travel, they tend to do lectures and do a lot of training, so when they're not available, they'll be able to provide it, bring someone up from planning to center to provide the backup. It's a very comprehensive solution. I'm glad that we all came together.
Yeah. So the the amount of that's budgeted, $432,000, that's on
$150
case. Is that using 150 cases?
Yes, that's right. But, and it's not to exceed the way we have it.
Oh, it's not to exceed.
Yeah, the number of this hundred is not to exceed. It's all based on projections.
Okay.
So, Ken, I notice here, and it's just speculation on your part, I understand. I'm curious if he, in 2014, it completed 105 autopsies, and then in 2015, it spiked considerably, went up like 35%, 37 more, or 33%. So, do you have any ideas, like, variables that account for that?
It's a lot of different things. One, I think, we have an aging population. There's more unintended deaths. I mean, if you kind of look at, if you think about it, we have some very large mass deaths. You have a car accident with five or six people in the car.
Right.
Those are all on a side.
Right.
These numbers, heroin is a big part of that. Any unintended death like that requires an autopsy. So,
yeah.
So again, it's been climbing considerably over the last few years. And there's many factors, it's not just one factor.
Yeah, 2015 had some bad car.
Think about the kids that were
in the
military.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Mr. President? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. All right. We will now go speak with Paul, who wants to come tonight and share with us.
Thanks, Chairman Lopez. My friend Hank Roach is very much that he wants to say hello to you tonight.
He's
a big fan of yours.
He had sent me an email earlier to give him a call after.
What I want to bring attention to you guys is that, you guys swore years ago with Congressman Hinchy to get my girlfriend the Social Security. Because she has the brain tumor that involves her pituitary gland. That gland controls every gland in her body. So what's happened is she's wound up with only 8% calcium in her body. All of a sudden, she has beautiful teeth and she's eating and just breaking off. 5 years ago, I started to go and contact, everybody under the sun. To see what I could get to help her, and I got turned down by everyone. Now, what happened was is basically because I'm going to let her jump in, we're both down to speak, but basically I believe it's because they're not too quick to pay on, like, Part B, and a lot of places, or Medicaid, a lot of places wouldn't accept that, and even the Medicaid spend now. They don't want to touch it, and I just spoke with Congressman Faso about this last Monday. I'm going to be meeting with him, or 2 Mondays ago, and I raised this problem. He said, "Paul, I got to tell you something. I don't know. I'm going to tell you we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. There's not one oral surgeon in Ulster County will touch anyone. If you're anyway attached with Medicare or Medicaid." Automatic refusal. And the thing I looked into is, you can't force them to take the money. You can put a gun to their head and it's not going to do you any good. So what happened is I wound up contacting Chris through the mix, and this has been going on for years, and Chris said, what was that dentist you referred me to from Bishop? Dr. Wise?
Dr. Heise.
Hi.
In Fishkill. Yeah, he's an oral surgeon.
So he actually got back to us, and so did the original one was Dr. Bird. They sent everybody who wanted to sell out. And if you remember, I addressed the legislature years ago about the problem with sending people there and the Medicaid transportation sending them all that way. And boy, now what happened is Dr. Bird retired. And he called us, and he's 3 months out of retirement. He just called us and said, "Hey, I retired 3 months and you guys are in trouble." And through calling Chris's dentist, one of the secretaries actually spoke with Janet and said, "You know what? My boyfriend had the same problem, and we're going to tell you there's only one place to go next to the Brooklyn College for Dentistry, and that is the Westchester Medical Center." So, after all these years, they finally went, we arranged for the spend down, We're trying to put it all in place. She's got surgery for next Tuesday, and it's finally going to be done, but it's 5 years. And I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, I'm a pretty sharp guy. I'm resourceful, you know? I'm the, like the cab driver. I get people where they need to go, and it's taken me 5 years to get here. What about the person that doesn't have the resources and doesn't run an advocacy like I do and have contacts? Where are these people going? And I'm walking around. You know what it reminds me of? Being in London and looking at all the people in England with all the bad teeth. And I think about that, and I'm like saying to myself, holy goodness, you know, Houston, we have a problem here. We can't even take care of our own with dentistry in Ulster County. And the bill would have been for, you know, an extraction like that over $20,000. And it's just taken so long, and I don't understand. When I said to the congressman, I said, what can we do to entice, okay, to get these, you know, dentists, these are all searched for Ulster County, to accept these people's insurance. Shannon, I finally got her a doctor. No one would take her insurance for even a physician. And I finally got my doctor from, my doctors actually from Sorey's Family Practice, Mandelbaum Robbins and Dr. Morris Sullivan. She had to switch her insurance. And now we find her, got her the medical, because they wouldn't do the surgical without a physician signing off, saying that with the brain tumor, if they put her under, that she would, you know, there's a chance she wouldn't wake up again. The doctor has to sign off saying that she will be able to survive the surgery. Now, Shannon, go ahead and give them your little part of your story, because you can probably fill in more than, you know, I've given them bits and pieces.
His dentist's office and secretary who had a boyfriend with similar problems and no insurance, they recommended me to Westchester. I contacted them and they said, you have to have Medicaid and we'll help you. I explained, I don't have Medicaid, don't qualify for Medicaid, I have to spend to a spend down. As long as at the time of surgery, the Medicaid is turned on from the spend down, I can have the surgery. They want to ensure that they're going to be paid. But our question was, why does the money have to support another county rather than Ulster County? And the doctor said, you're not the only one, Shannon. There are people coming in every single day that can't find the help. Through Medicare, they don't cover any dental. Through the Medicaid, they will cover the dental, but you have to qualify. If you make too much money, you don't qualify. But if you're under enough, you can do a spend down to get the help. And got it for the spend down, or I would not be getting this help. But my main concern is, what do other people do? And why can't the physician go to county receive the money, rather than having to go all the way to the city to get work done? It's a big transportation cost, it's a big expense to have it done, and a quick time frame in order to get the help you need. Like the spend down's not turned out, my surgery's the 11th, I have to end tomorrow, meet the spend down, give them 3 to 5 days to process their paperwork, and hopefully it's turned on so that I can get transportation to get down and to have the surgery and it's paid for. So it's even complicated all the way through. I don't know if that helps or hinders.
So you said that the doctors wouldn't touch your case because
they I put stacks of $1,000 bills in front of them.
I would tell them I had Medicare, and they said, well, we don't deal with Medicare. I have well care.
What would they use for anesthesia?
That's the thing she had, that they don't cover the anesthesia.
They'll do local.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've had extraction before. They didn't really know me.
Yeah, she's got adverse effects. And they have to go in and take them all at once. When I had mine, because, you know, I got my jaw shattered in Somalia, I had to go and they had, Dr. Berg took out all 20, what did he take out, 20, 20, 22 or 2018. And he put me out and put it, and I addressed the legislature with 130 stitches in my mouth.
I couldn't understand what you were saying.
Good. But anyway, yeah, I've seen this as a problem. And then talking to my doctor and talking to other dentists, they said you're a rock in a hard place.
Now they won't take Medicaid, or you weren't qualified for Medicaid?
I don't personally qualify for Medicaid. I'm just in an area where I can do a spend down to get the Medicaid help.
But no one here would take it.
Right.
In Ocean County.
Well, yeah, I have Medicare. They say, oh, Gerald doesn't cover Medicare. Blah, blah, blah. So that's it. Then I would explain to them I had Part D well care with $1,000 for dental coverage. Oh, it doesn't include surgery, and it doesn't include anesthesia, and it will only pay for like an x-ray and a well checkup and a root canal. I'm well beyond all of that. Well beyond. And I would explain it to me medically.
Infection has made her literally sick.
After a dentist, after oral surgeon, after colleges, everyone.
We went literally to the phone book and started at A for dentists and oral surgeons, and 5 years later we got the Z and we got nowhere. And just through this we found out about there were two that came up, and the one was the Bronx College.
Right.
Okay, for dentistry, and the closest one was Westchester.
And that's how I didn't qualify, because I did qualify for the Medicaid spend down.
So, after 5 years now, the job is going to be done. It's not going to help. What we're here doing tonight is not going to help Shannon. It's already arranged. I've got the money. I'm paying for it. But what I'm thinking about is all these other people. What do we do with these people in our county? They don't know. They haven't spent years in banging their head against the wall like I have, making 1,000 phone calls and asking questions. What do we do with the normal person? And I'm going to tell you, one of the worst things was when my jaw was shattered, was the infection. The infection goes through your body, and it makes you so sick. It's horrific, and we're just hoping that we can get some attention here tonight so that you guys will check it out, and you're going to see we're telling you the absolute truth. In Houston, we have a problem in our county. We need, and then one thing I asked the congressman is, why can't we help our own? He wants to meet with me in May in his office, and I was actually going to ask Craig and Chris if they would accompany me to go sit down with the congressman.
You don't want me to come?
You can come. All of you. The more the merrier. You want to come, Daddy? So, yeah.
You were the closest, so you could probably walk there, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I had mentioned, I'm not sure if it was in this committee or in the Ulster Coalition Against Narcotics, but we had last year, it was in 2015, end of 2015, in our report, asked for a family advocate for drug addiction. You know, when people can't get into rehab or can't...
You know how many times I've pulled that off?
But I always said that we should have one for medical. You know, we should have a...
You might want to hire me.
...family advocate for cases like this. And I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, I had someone contact me about a woman who, she had mental health services, and her insurance company told her and sent her a letter saying she was approved for X amount of visits to this mental health specialist. Well, the mental health specialist never got paid, and when the mental health specialist contacted the insurance company said, no, the claims are denied, she's not, you know, eligible for them. So she had thousands of dollars in medical bills.
And then turned right around and want her to pay it.
Yeah. So I on my legislative letterhead, I wrote the company. I'm not going to say publicly what's the name of the company, but she called me back 2 months later and said, I don't know what you did, but they decided to pay my, you know. So if she didn't contact me, I mean, I'm not saying that
it would have been.
But all they did was write a letter. You know, why isn't this? Here's this. Is that? You know, don't
find the old
things. You know, and sometimes you know you have the fortitude, you know, to press ahead and you know.
What do you call me, Chris?
And not your mother.
Is that the constituent?
Yeah.
That's one of the nicest things I've been
told.
I don't give up. The word no is not in my vocabulary. You show me no, I'm going to go around.
Family advocate for medical cases, you know. Someone who, like the ombudsman, you know, for family services, who handles that right now, to direct people when they have insurance problems.
I might be a taxi driver. I might, obviously, I get people where they need to go. Okay, but this one was Shannon. Remember that girl that I brought here, Lockwood, the girl that needed the kidney? And after they wrote the article in the paper when I brought her here, I was contacted by somebody through the newspaper that read the article and said, you know, there's a second donors list. And I had no idea. We put her on the donors list less than a year later. She got a phone call 3 o'clock in the morning saying, get yourself to the hospital. We have a kidney in dry ice being shipped in a container and a helicopter on the way to the hospital right here, and they're going to, and she got the kidney, and she's still alive today. We moved her to Buffalo. And I got that girl a kidney in less time than it's taken.
Again, it's trying.
Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, run this by you guys, see how you feel, and, you know, I think we're all on the same page here.
I think the idea of the medical advocate in the sense that I'm only in my 40s. But what if somebody who's 85 or 90 do that's still pretty self-sufficient but just needs that extra thought process help to it? Or other times when the infections are bad and the headaches are bad and the mouth is killing me, I can't think straight. How am I supposed to know what I'm going to call them to get through that conversation? So I think that's a wonderful idea.
I know, prior to Paul contacting me about this specific issue, my mom had required, you know, like one tooth extraction that she had gotten done like 2.5 years ago. And it was discovered maybe 6 months prior. She had been going to a dentist on Pine Street in Kingston, who's semi-retired, still has practice, but he told her, he said, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't feel comfortable recommending any oral surgeon on this side of the river. So he had recommended an oral surgeon in Poughkeepsie for her issue, and I went and called my dentist. Like, I go to a dentist in Southern Ulster County in Marlborough, and he recommended Dr. Hyes in Fishkill. And so I convinced my mom to go with my dentist recommendation. And so my mom went there, loved the guy, had a very great, you know, dentist side manner, so to speak, very, very nice man, very
but he
cute.
Wanted to help us,
yeah.
First, but he said he couldn't.
And so when Paul had contacted me numerous times about this, probably 3 or 4 times over a couple months, yeah, and, you know, I had told him a couple times, I said, well, you know, this, you know, my dentist refers people to this oral surgeon in Fishkill, you know, and I gave him the number, and he called, and then he thanked me because he told me that Dr. Hyde's office was very helpful, and they gave him this information. But, I mean, it's something where, you know, more rural counties like Ulster County for certain types of health care. I know for myself, the health issues I have, I'm going to Dutchess County or Westchester County to get correctly diagnosed and to get the top-notch treatment that I need in certain areas of health, and I can't seem to find the level of quality that I'm satisfied with in the Ulster County area.
We have oral surgeons in our county. It's just that she has a brain tumor, and that escalates to a different level.
Well, no, I mean, with dentists, the funding,
yeah, sure.
Nobody takes Medicaid and Medicare.
Insurance was the biggest problem.
Yeah.
But there are oral surgeons.
Well, I mean, the issue he's calling attention to is the fact that they won't take Medicaid or Medicare.
Well, yeah, when it comes to her unique situation,
right. No.
No, I mean,
they don't get paid. They get paid $9 on the dollar.
Yeah, they
don't want to
undercut. I just understood them, because I thought it was because of her tumor that you couldn't go under anesthesia.
No. They're saying that nobody will take it. Doesn't matter, even if you have a more simple case.
Yeah, they don't,
well, that's
because
that's federal level.
It takes them a long time to get paid.
They are the healthcare.
There is a hospital.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that we should.
The family institute held out in Ellenville at the family medical practice there. I know that they have an oral surgeon that they accept that. Well, yeah, and I think that's the difference. Now, you have to be under anesthesia because of your situation, correct? And I think that's kind of clouds it a little bit, because if there are oral surgeons.
Okay, let me clarify. If they only extract one or two teeth, they can use Novocaine. But if you've got to go in and extract them all, there is no Novocaine. They will not keep you. They have to anesthesiize you to remove them all like that.
It's your comfort level.
Right. So,
yeah.
So it'd be more of an anesthesiologist that wouldn't be something that I'm sure they bill separately from the oral surgeon.
The oral surgeon has Medicare. Mm-hmm. You may say Medicare doesn't pay that. And I would explain, for my Part D, I have WellCare with a dental coverage of $1,000 a year. They would not accept my insurance. It didn't matter.
So nobody in Ulster County accepts WellCare.
I just thought it was something I'd bring to your attention, because I truly, you know, I lived in Ulster County almost all my life. I don't go to Greene County and buy a car. Okay? I don't go shop in Greene County. I keep my money here in my county. I believe in that. My father, you know, like, beat that into me as a child. You know, you keep the money where you live. Keep it recirculating in your area, you know? That's why you want to promote business in Ulster County. I don't want to be promoting business in Greene County for them to get money.
Well, I know that you researched this a lot, but I just went online and I typed in a search engine, oral surgeon Medicaid, and there's a place in Poughkeepsie, Royal Smiles Dentistry, Medicaid accepted intubation, whatever that means, 13 Market Street, Poughkeepsie. I don't know anything about it. I never heard of this place, Royal Smiles Dentistry.
And not Medicaid.
That acts as a premium, correct? That is based on your income. So you have to meet that premium.
The
threshold before our Medicaid kicks in order to cover.
So they do one with WellCare insurance. Or surgeon with WellCare.
I do know, you know, and this is all after the fact, you know, because your wife spent all this time.
Right.
When I was at in college, I was near 23rd Street and 2nd Avenue, and I think like in the 25th or 26th and 2nd Avenue was NYU Dental College. And I was there a couple of times, you know, checkups and filling some things. And it was either a sliding scale or a very cheap. I don't know if that were oral surgery.
Yeah, but if you had
a student doing oral surgery, but
if you had a Medicaid spend down,
right,
then you refuse it.
You have to expend every possible resource, every possible insurance coverage you can possibly get. If you qualify for the buying your own personal dental, you don't qualify for the college. If you qualify for Medicaid, you don't qualify for the college.
Do you have WellCare?
It's Carl.
I'd be willing to take Linkster Hounds and Vice and say there's no good oral surgeons in Ulster County. Why would you want to get it done here?
Well, actually, that's trying to quite the what Dr. Heiss told us.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So I guess the moral of your presentation and the story, essentially, and this information that we're uncovering is that we have a shortage. Well, there's a shortage of quality oral surgeons in Ulster County too, but the net end result for the residents of Ulster County is that people who are on Medicaid and Medicare and have serious oral surgery issues can't get the coverage.
Yeah, and Westchester is a heck of a ride. So anyway, I guess we're going to rest our case at that point, and we'll see what you guys can come up with.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, you know, I think the idea that Carl has suggested about an advocate, in the county to work on your behalf, on behalf of those that are having problems, there is some nonprofits. There's RCAL, that's the Resource Center for Accessible Living, they're geared more towards people with disabilities, but I don't know what the conditions are falling. And there are a lot of really good people there that would help you, and give you advice on how best to go about doing the things that you need done. And they've got really good advocates there. So, yeah, they're a good go-to organization. I can get that information for you, or you can look at Anthony Michio, and actually, Carl,
you have that phone number.
You know him well.
What's that?
Anthony
Mignon, yes.
Mignon.
Yes, I know him very well.
Yeah, he's now the director over there. He's a wealth of knowledge.
Is he from Florida?
No, he was in the You saw him in the hardware store across from Bosie's years ago?
Oh, okay. So anyway, that's my new DVA. That's my new DVA, it's the Fowler Advocacy.
I got to tell you, I think that's a medical family advocate would do this county very, very good. Okay. Short story, 2008, my daughter had an eating disorder. And I had very good insurance. We got her into this Renfrew Center in Philadelphia. It was the first and the largest center for eating disorders. It's a great place, world renowned. Well, my insurance company monitored her stay there. It was inpatient. After the first week, I had a meeting with her doctors and the insurance company. And the insurance company claimed that she was getting better and she no longer qualified for inpatient treatment.
She needs to be
After 7 days, okay, and they would no longer pay for it. We had to go to an outpatient treatment program, which there weren't any around here back then. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if there still are. The closest one was New York City. That's 5 days a week every day. You can't go back and forth to New York City. So I got on the horn and I started to call everybody I could, and I went online and I found out that there were these federal parity laws that were already in place, basically stated that mental health services are the same as medical services, and they cannot deny you just because you're getting better. So when I contacted my insurance company, it was CDPHP at the time, the name of the company, which I will state who it is, United Medical Healthcare, I forget the name of the company. Denied. I called CDPHP, and they fired them, and they let me readmit my daughter for a second time into this place, and she stayed for 21 days, and wasn't getting better. But I would have never known, and to take that step and just to try to fight it with the insurance.
Oh, I'm a fighter. I fight it.
And so how many other people are going through the same things? Maybe not with eating disorders, but with mental health or with health issues.
These walls. I think you set up that somehow we've all run into it.
Anyway. Obviously, it doesn't come without a cost, an ombudsman or an advocate. I mean, we appropriated $100,000 for the for the drug advocate, and this would probably have, you know, would be a bigger coverage because the medical a lot, you know, there's a lot more medical claims. You know,
trust me, I know. Joe Stoffler took me and gave me a tour of his place. What was that, Veritas Villa?
Yep, Villa Veritas.
Well, I'm not Bill Clinton. I did anyhow. So anyway. But I just wanted to thank you guys for hearing us out tonight.
Sure.
And I just wanted to show you that. I finally went and did it.
Very good.
I met with Suzanne Holt on Friday, my time center to meet me, and she said I'm doing everything correctly and just keep doing what you're doing and you'll have no legal problems. So anyway, guys, I just thank you for your time. And
sure.
Hopefully, maybe we can come up with something that we can help our own here. I mean, this is not going to be a quick fix. This is going to take time. So, anyway, Carl, one other thing. You know Bobby, right? My friend Bobby Schumann?
Yes.
Right? Cheryl just had an episode. 2 days in the hospital. She lost her job at Lowe's. No medical coverage. Bobby opens the mail. He's got a bill for $14,000+ for 2 days of her in the hospital with no medical coverage. Boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right. Oh, thank you. All
right. Oh, yeah.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for hearing us out, you know?
Yeah.
It was good. I'm sorry we were a little bit late. We were running late. Wow. Chris, hope things work out with your cat.
Not good. I gotta get home quick.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, mine. Yeah.
I got 6 rescues. I know. They can be quite costly.
Yeah.
So Carl, be good.
Okay,
and
you're
everyone, and you, young man, take care of your son.
Right. You soon.
Be sure you talk to him.
I'll talk
to you soon,
see
Paul.
See you, Daddy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Best of luck.
All right. We will move on to, I need a tooth extraction.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
Dr. Hyde, it's still my motor will swerve on it.
Resolution 177, closing door appeal, is one of the without a impairable and a
medical replacement. I'll second it.
I'm going crazy.
I'm going crazy with the resolves. There's something in resolves in here. Yeah, well, first one's right.
Let's play the analysis. Resolution 135 that was withdrawn by the sponsor last month.
Right.
The perfect resolution. You know you have the support of the entire Republican caucus on this. You want to get this passed? I'd like to make an amendment to this resolution to strike everything in 177 and replace it with 135.
Well, the problem with that, though,
I'll second that before we move on, and then we'll discuss the amendment.
Okay. All right, so we're going to vote on it?
Well, is there any? Did you want to talk about it?
Well, yeah, okay. So, right, so that's what I was going to talk about anyway. So, essentially, I mean, the reason why I put this up is, I mean, I think, you know, my two colleagues here, you know, you guys know I have a high level of legislative integrity, and I...
That's what you can tell
us. I felt that legislators Hefner's resolution was very vague. And it lacked the specificity that I would like to have seen in a resolution. And I had made multiple attempts to work with him, and we just had different visions for what we wanted. You know, I guess I'm a policy wonk. You know, being a policy wonk is maybe dry. It doesn't elicit the emotions out of your constituent at times. You know, that maybe if you're kind of drawn, you know, you're hitting on other areas of politics that gets the people out and gets people excited and that kind of thing. So I wanted to have a very substantive resolution that specifically talked about areas of the Affordable Care Act that that are working or that are working well enough that they need to be protected and they shouldn't be tampered with in whatever healthcare plan is put in place in lieu of the Affordable Care Act.
Which was eloquently stated in your original.
But the problem was that the American Care Act came through, and who would have thought the Republicans in Congress, and that's not meant at my Republican colleagues, but I would have never imagined that you know, the Republican Congress in Washington would have put something up so quickly. You know, and I'm thinking 2, 3, 4 months, you know, maybe even longer before something was put up realistically. You know, I don't mean that facetiously. I just mean that, you know, just understanding the climate of Washington. So when the American Care Act was put up, it essentially, from a legislative perspective, even though we're only talking about quote-unquote meaningless memorializing resolutions, it made my resolution a moot point legislatively because the plan that they put up wasn't a comparable plan, and there were some issues in there that would be troubling to a lot of people, and I'm sure even, you know, members of the Republican caucus as well. So what I did was I went back to the drawing board, and I was rather busy, so I had to put the amendments up like the day of the vote. You know, I just had, you know, other issues going on in my personal, professional life outside of here that I couldn't get it together before then. And, you know, I decided to withdraw it because I knew I didn't have the votes. And then actually it turned out a couple days later, they withdrew. It didn't make it through the vote for the following day, actually, on Thursday. It got pulled from... or the following Tuesday, I'm trying to remember what day.
Right.
So 2 days later, it got pulled in Washington. Mm-hmm. And but the reality is that that plan went through in the form of a bill, the American Care Act, and it had some issues that would be troubling to myself and to members of the Democratic Caucus and to residents of Ulster County, to healthcare professionals, doctors, other healthcare professionals that met with our congressman in District 19, John Faso, just last week in his office to discuss, you know, their concerns. And so, you know, it would be legislatively disingenuous of me to agree with the amendment that my two colleagues are proposing because we already know what that plan was, so it almost went through the pipe of going through a full vote in the Senate, and so, you know.
I think the key word in what you just said is was, because it didn't pass, it failed because it was poorly written piece of legislation. So for me, we are back to square one where we were prior to them introducing the American Care Act. So if that's the case, then why wouldn't you be receptive to reverting back to the original that was prior to the Republicans putting forward the bill?
Well, because it was already stated that, I mean, it was legislatively written and stated that, you know, they had several ideas and grand visions of essentially turning Medicaid into a block format of funding to individual states, which would be problematic. And I know there was a Congressman Faso and another New York legislator in Washington had arranged for New York state government to pick up the Medicaid and Medicare costs from and it was felt that the block grant funding was still in play with that, so it was thought of as being sort of a sort of a sleight of hand type thing fiscally, so that's one issue that, you know, a lot of people are concerned with, even because that's in the original resolution essentially, and everybody in this room and all the Republicans are okay with that. There's also the issue of elderly people, older Americans, I believe it's over the age of 50, can be charged up to
500% more under the American Care Act was the plan, and under the current Affordable Care Act, it's 300% more. So that would have been, devastating financially to the most needy segment of our population and people that are in need of quality health care, you know, that they're already struggling to afford as it is. So if you're having a 200% increase over and above the 300% increase that's already allowable, where insurance premiums can be charged up that more. So, in good conscience, I have to leave that in. You know, legislatively being, you know, versed to the level that I am on these issues, and then, so I also heard something about addiction treatment. Now, while there was questioning of the healthcare secretary by some media representatives, and this was after the American Care Act poll, and so he was asked a direct question from a representative of the media about whether or not they would, for any new plan, that there would be a tentative replacement attempt of the Affordable Care Act, would they remove the mandate that requires some form of addiction treatment services in all insurance policies? And the way that I wrote that, if you look at how I say some form, the reason why I say that is we had a woman that came here about 2.5 years ago. She was in tears because she talked about how her insurance company, MDP, turned down a request for addiction treatment services for her 22-year-old son. And she was told by the representative of MDP that he would have to fail, like, at least twice, in order for him to get covered. And see, that, you know, technically they're providing addiction treatment services, but again, the federal government, you know, we don't really regulate the health insurance industry as much as people would think.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no requirement that tells insurance companies when that coverage has to kick in. So they just have to have basically a language stating a policy that they have it. Okay, but then this poor woman's son died, you know, he had the ultimate failure. He died from a heroin overdose. So I feel that, you know, in light of, you know, there's members of this committee that are even more active on extracurricular Narcan, right, Carl? You're on Narcan, so.
No, that's UCAN.
UCAN, I'm sorry.
Right, Narcan, you know what I
mean. Thanks for the correction. But so, yeah, we all sponsored Narcan training in our district. So, it's a serious issue in Ulster County as it is in elsewhere in upstate New York and around the country. So I thought it was important to add that language. And, there was some discussions that, you know, clinics where people can go and get, like anatomical screening and services for, counseling services for needs, like men and women with sexual health issues and that type of thing. You know, there's nearly 5 million people that use those clinics, you know, for where they get, you know, subsidized and sliding scale healthcare coverage. Many of these people don't have insurance. These are the types of people that fall through the gaps, even with the Affordable Care Act in place, that still don't have insurance. So I felt it was important to leave that language in there. So, I mean, I just, those were actually the only issues that I added.
Right. Three whereas. And those three are essentially the difference between this resolution and your original, correct?
Yes, sir. So I think those are, all three of those are very important issues that I think, you know, like, I mean, all of us have elderly people, you know, it's somewhat of a gray county, Ulster County is. So I think the 500% versus 300% increase in the premiums, that's an important issue. I think the addiction treatment mandate is an important issue that, you know, that was something that I wasn't aware of. I just happened to be watching some news coverage of it the other night, and I actually added that in there, 2 days after I submitted it. To, or a day and a half after I submitted to get it in there. And,
you know, the other issue with, you know, clinics that provide people with sexual health screenings and counseling services.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
So that's all I really added.
Out of those three, which are the two that are most important to you?
Well, what's troublesome for you and Carl?
If the difference between this resolution and your original are really three whereas,
and three corresponding resolves.
Right, the three corresponding resolves. I feel comfortable with the one that is in reference to the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other resolve that is in reference to addiction. And the one that I would have an issue with, and I would, I can leave it up to you whether you want to strike that resolution, is the one regarding the reproductive health. Because to me, that it's just, it's a cleverly written way to say Planned Parenthood. And
yeah, I didn't say Planned Parenthood.
No, exactly. And of course, you know, I think Planned Parenthood does some great things. I don't think that it's a not-for-profit. I mean, it's a for-profit organization.
Right.
It's used federal funding.
Right.
And I don't necessarily agree with everything or everywhere that my taxpayer dollars go to in order to fund Planned Parenthood. So,
look, if I added some language, because now, here's the thing. The way that, and thanks for the compliment that it was cleverly written, because I wrote every word of this resolution myself, pretty much. Vicki made a couple minor resolutions. So, you know, in my second term as a legislator, you know, I think I found my writing style and doing things and putting together solid resolutions. I write my own, but, you know, and I'm good at the symmetry, getting a whereas and a corresponding resolve. I think it's important. But so, if I were to add some specificity of that,
if you were to strike it all together, I think you would.
Well, what?
Listen, I'm saying, if you want bipartisan support, if you want this to pass unanimously, like you have, suggested through various press avenues, I think that that in order to get the Republican caucus on board with this, I would think that you should consider striking that one, keeping your other ones in. And to me, that would satisfy my concerns. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for Carl, but
what do you say, Carl?
Well, I don't know why there's too much in here right now. It's absolutely too much. It's a memorializing resolution.
I know, but
we need to get to the point of what it is we want to do, okay? We want to, as it says in the title, opposing a full repeal of the Affordable Care Act, okay? We don't need all this.
But just like our...
But I'm willing to compromise, okay?
But just like our president said, Carl, who would have known healthcare was so complicated? I mean, it is complicated. I knew it was complicated.
And we're not writing the law.
He just said he's willing to compromise.
We're not writing the law. We're not writing the law. Yeah.
Okay, well, the compromise, I, here's the thing.
You're writing the law.
No, here's...
I barely could read it because I got so upset with the fact that when you... First of all, when I asked to co-sponsor this, right, and we sat down and we took out one resolve.
Well, you asked to co-sponsor it after we
made
that.
Made it a whereas. Okay.
You contacted me the next
day. We were in the right direction. And then, okay, so guess what? A plan did come out, and you withdrew this because of support. So this is fine. And then, this is just... abominable. It's just too much.
It's not enough. No, but that's what healthcare. If you read the Affordable Care Act, it's a lot of information. It's unfortunately, apparently, it wasn't enough information because there are serious problems with the Affordable Care Act. You know,
it doesn't matter. We're not writing
none of this.
Yeah, I think we have a serious problem right now in that. You know, the way, and I don't want to get in the weeds on this conversation because we all want to be...
You're going to send this to Chuck Schumer, Kristen Gillibrand, John Faso, Andrew Cuomo, right? And I'm guaranteeing you, none of them are going to personally read
maybe
this. Faso. Their advisors are going to read
Faso,
okay? And they're all going to look at it, and they're going to fit through half of it and say, okay, that's it, I read it, boom. You know? You got to make it appealing so that people want to read it, because otherwise, all you're doing is treading water. You're not getting them.
But that's the problem, Carl, is that I think we have elected representatives in Washington that don't do their jobs. I don't think they're well-versed in health care.
Well, I've got to say, we've never gotten a response ever from Charles Schumer on any of our memorializing resolutions or Christian Gillibrand. Okay? You know who we've gotten? I have gotten responses back from Larkin and Bonasek and Gibson. And that was it.
Yeah, well, Chris Gibson and I worked
never,
for Ryan.
Never, Chris never Governor Cuomo or never anybody, because those people are too busy to read these things.
I think, listen, somebody like Chris Gibson, he put in a lot of time. He and I developed a very cordial and professional relationship working on Lyme disease together. And we would see each other out at events, and he continually complimented me. He told me he used my information from letters to the editor.
So the fifth resolve.
Bring you in a little bit.
My proposed amendment would be to strike the fifth resolve out. And is there an accompanying whereas that goes for that fifth resolve?
Yeah, there is.
Where is that whereas?
That's a little longer than the resolve.
The resolve cuts to the chase.
I mean, it's on page 2. Whereas millions of men and women benefit from the federal funding of health care clinics / programs.
All right, strike that whereas corresponding to the fifth where or fifth resolve. Okay. Do you have any other issues?
I have no other issues.
Well, I'll be honest with you.
Now you're politicizing it.
Well, I'm not politicizing.
I have a lot of respect for what you did, all your research and everything, but that resolve, and then whereas, just totally politicizes this.
No, but the way that I wrote it, it basically doesn't say that you can't take funding away from organizations like that. It just says you can't do it in conjunction with the ACA. And our representative, John Fessler, said the same thing. So the way that I wrote
you've got to look at the bigger picture. Here's my opinion.
I know what the bigger picture is.
Memorializing resolutions, okay, should bring the legislature together as one voice, okay? Mm-hmm. Resolutions like this are going to divide the legislature, and you're not going to get any voice. That's the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you sponsored resolutions that were 100%, you know, voted on.
Yeah, I know.
Unanimously. And I have too. And to me, that means more. Not a 12 to 11, you know, or 10 to a 7, or 11 to a 9.
Yeah.
Okay? Unanimous. And that's the big picture.
Yeah.
And this will pass unanimously.
If I take that one out.
Yeah, I know.
Both of those out.
You know?
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to vote for it. I would go back to the original one or take this.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know that I'm a very amicable guy, and I'm just, we can always make amendments on the floor, okay? I would prefer, I've had discussions with one member of my caucus that has taken an interest in this, and you know,
so you mean they're not behind you on this one?
No, they are. They think I did a great job on it, but you know, I just think if the American Care Act didn't have language in there discussing that particular issue, then I wouldn't have put it in there.
The American Care Act was defeated.
Yeah, but
it wasn't going to get enough support through reconciliation, where they only need 51 in order to pass it. It's not going to get support. So to me, it's dead. And if there are going to be changes, it's going to be piecemeal, probably the way it should be with bipartisan support. So So back to Carl's suggestion of this one. You saw me on your original resolution as a nonpartisan alternative to Resolution 15 that had passed and didn't get everybody's support in the legislature. To me, this cheapens what your original point was.
I feel like taking a shower now.
So, you know, and we'll leave it up to you. If you want to pass that, if you want Republican support and unanimous support in the legislature,
I didn't. I think you guys know this. This isn't like some bait and switch deal. And I mean, I as somebody who's a student of our healthcare system, you know, the fact that that was in the American Care Act means that it's in the mindset of, you know, members of Congress that they're looking at tying in defunding of these types of programs into specifically with a revision of the Affordable Care Act and whatever the new replacement would be in whatever it's called, in whatever shape or form it's in. And, you know, even our representative, John Faso, was at a Republican strategy retreat when he was his first month in office, and there was a tape recording that was unbeknownst to him that transpired where they recorded him having stated essentially what, you know, my resolved and whereas paragraphs cleverly state, as you complimented my writing style on that area of my resolution. You know, he said that we shouldn't tie in, Faso said we should not tie in any defunding of these types of clinics, specifically with the Affordable Care Act. It would be the death blow to our political party, meaning the GOP. And apparently his colleagues don't listen to him because they put him there anyway.
Not necessarily, they just disagree with him.
Well, no, but I mean, I think, listen, he... You know, I'm going to give Faso credit where credit's due. He voted against, he was one of only a hand, I heard one source three, I heard another 12. He didn't vote for our internet browsing history to be sold to marketing companies.
We stay on the,
the bigger picture.
Yeah, the bigger picture.
Okay, so let's call the question then. The amendment, making the amendment.
This was the amendment to revert back to the original. Well, would you consider withdrawing that motion if you agree to striking that?
I thought that's what I did, but I guess I didn't.
Okay.
All right, so withdraw it and make another motion.
I need the motion of the resolve, striking the fifth resolve and the whereas. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 whereas on page 2.
Okay. He made the motion. You seconded it.
I seconded it.
Okay. So then let's call the question on the vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
No.
Okay.
No. Well, I'm procedurally Robert's rules. I'm correct here.
It's three of us.
Yeah, I understand. So then I guess we'll what? Then we then make a motion to vote on the resolution?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Well, would you consider...
As amended.
As amended.
What do you mean?
As amended. You lost. The amendment carries. You need 3 yes votes.
Yeah, but I didn't... No, but the amendment doesn't carry.
Sure does.
No, you don't. You need 3 full votes from the committee.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're all 3.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And 3. Yeah. Well, and 2.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
4.
Well.
You lost.
Well, then...
Sorry, I'm the parliamentary and he lost.
No, I wasn't looking to win. No, but I'm saying, so it's...
So...
No, I knew. Yeah, but so, but it did. Yeah.
So whatever it is.
Well, no, that was the amendment that we voted on.
Right. You voted on 177 as amended.
All right. Well, here's how you can
I'm going to give you a gift, okay? Even though we voted on it already,
yeah.
Okay, what you could have done was just not agree to the amendment, because you as the sponsor, you don't have to agree with the amendment, okay? But you got exactly what you wanted anyway. We voted on it, and we lost. But you could have just not agreed with the amendment.
Yeah, but that's a no vote. That's what I did. We voted on your suggestion that of striking out the resolve in those two. Right. So I just did what you said. Yeah, right. I would have to vote yes on it for it to pass. You need three votes through a five-member committee. It doesn't matter how many people, three, four, or five, are here.
Show up, right?
Right.
Now you're not agreeing to that amendment. Is that worth it to you for it to not get out of committee?
Well, that is, but I can amend it on the floor. Let me talk it over with my caucus.
I'd like to make a motion to postpone it till the night of caucus.
Yeah, you can discuss it with your caucus. Or postpone
it. We don't vote on it right now.
Yeah.
That way you get a chance to see. Yeah. You run it up the flagpole and see if anybody moves it.
Because if this is a deal breaker for us here and it doesn't happen on the floor.
Well, I'm saying, I can get a petition of discharge and put it on the floor, and I can make an amendment then.
You could, but you also want...
I want one vote out of your caucus, right, of course.
Right, but...
I would want more than that, but... So listen, I'm amicable. I'm just wondering if there's some way that I could be more specific and just basically state, you know, I could add language to it and say, this is no way inhibits defunding of Planned Parenthood through outside legislative or policy-making decisions outside of a reform to the Affordable Care Act. That's basically what I'm saying, but I'm not explicitly stating that, okay? So if my caucus was fine with language like that, I'm fine with language like that. So that's basically what I'm saying already. I'm just not explicitly stating it. It's inferred through my literary style.
I know what it means.
Exactly. So let's call the question and do the vote.
Before we do the vote, what is the means to the end here, okay? The end is you want this to pass on the floor.
I understand that,
okay? Paul, but you want it to pass on the floor, okay? Now, the only reason, in my opinion, is that you want to vote, and you want us to vote it down, and then you'll go to petition to discharge, is to bring it back on the floor for totally political reasons. At that point, you don't care a bit about the resolution. You only care about the political ramifications.
You guys know I don't operate like that.
That's what you're saying to me. That's exactly what you're saying. You're not willing to compromise.
There's no difference
on this, and you're willing to have it go down in committee. It is totally
political.
I respect you for that, as long as you own up to it.
I'm not owning up to it.
Because that's exactly what this is. All right, let's call the vote.
Yeah.
Now, that's not what I'm looking to do.
Call the vote.
I wouldn't have written it in the way that I wrote it, if that's what it was. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, I really wish the Republicans wouldn't have put up the American Health Care Act, and we could have had it passed in the original version. I think the life would have been simpler. I didn't feel that the legislator Heffner's resolution was well written. He didn't write it, Vicky wrote it, but I mean, I told Vicky, I thought it was poorly written, and I thought it lacked a lot of specificity.
Well,
healthcare is a very complex issue.
You hear that, Vicky? It was poorly written.
That's right.
Well,
I told her. She knows what Vicky wrote.
Well,
she wrote it in about 12 minutes, so I'm
thinking. Postpone it.
It took me 3 hours to write this.
Would you consider postponing?
No, I mean, either way, we can make it palatable on the floor. You know that. I talk with Ken and I talk with you. And
yeah,
some
but last month you were going to bring this to the floor too,
and I pulled it out of because I just didn't want to turn it into a political theater and circus.
Well, this is political theater right now.
Well, no, it's not.
Not you.
Who the hell is it to be?
this is a healthy debate. We can have some conversations in private. I'll call Legislator Bill Figlio too. Carl and I have a good working relationship also. We can discuss things, you know, that are unwritten. And I understand, listen, I represent a very balanced constituency in my district, as do you, Legislator Lopez, and as do you. I mean, we're the three legislators that represent the most balanced districts out of the 23 members. We do. We have the most even makeup of registered voters in here. So that's a fact. So I can discuss with you gentlemen individually, you know, what some of our concerns might be about varying opinions with our constituency bases and things of that nature. And I would like to vote on it tonight, and we can try and work this out in the next week and a half.
I'm making an amendment to a motion to postpone it.
I just think it's really unfortunate that we
went from originally amending this in order to revert to its original form. Pulling that motion and compromising over one whereas, and there isn't any flexibility.
There might be on the floor. Let me see. We have time left.
See with your caucus?
No, and with your caucus too.
Well, individual members. I can tell you that our caucus is not going to support this whereas.
I can reword it in a way that they might.
It's all going to mean the same thing.
Not necessarily.
You know, if you add some words, you take some words out.
No, but that's
all going to be code.
If I word it in a way to reflect the sentiments of John Faso, that it might make a difference.
I'm not interested in the sentiments of John Faso.
I don't think any tampering. I mean, there's a lot of people that feel there shouldn't be tampering of those types of clinics if it's tied in, if it's correlated with.
I need some time to think this over. I'd rather move it through and I'll get my signatures and put it on the floor.
It's all right. You know what? Because right now, the health care bill is moot because it didn't even get to the floor. I have no problem voting no on this resolution. I don't care.
All right, that's fine.
How much your caucus can spend that I don't believe in women's
health care,
or I don't believe in this or that. It's totally political.
Some of the groups that you refer to criticize me when I make a moderate vote in my caucus when I'm up in moderate session. You know, I voted on Legislator Lapp's resolution. I took some criticism from people. I took criticism from Democrats. So I empathize with you, but you know, it would be disingenuous for me
to talk all you want
to take it out, okay? Knowing what I know, being a student of our healthcare system, I'm sorry.
And
it's nothing personal.
It's not going to change it.
Well, I can reword this. I can pull it. Let's have some discussions amongst our other fellow 20 colleagues and something that might come out.
Right, and let's do it the right way and postpone it so everybody can have this discussion.
We can have that discussion on the floor.
Sure
they can.
Yeah, and then we can spend an hour and a half on memorializing resolution.
Well, it's going to be a grand rock. It's going to be the last night of
resolution.
It'll be a fitting end to memorializing resolutions.
You know,
I'm a no.
Okay, that's fine. I'm a yes.
Look, it's going to
Go get your signatures.
Just for the record, I'm really disappointed that it turned into yet another politically charged discussion when it shouldn't have been. When my support was with this was originally because it was a nonpartisan alternative.
But for the for the record, everybody knows that I am not a partisan hack. And out of all the legislators in here, I am not a partisan hack. Everybody knows that.
Well, maybe this resolution can start
changing the matter. Okay. Right. I mean, look, we all get along, and sometimes we have difference of opinions. And to be quite frank with you, from what I was looking to do, it was problematic that the American Care Act was rolled out and it basically announced
things. Did you vote?
Yeah.
All right. So end of discussion.
Yeah.
Any?
Right. So what
have
you voted?
Two to one it failed. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate your input. I'll see what I can do. I listen. My phone lines are always open. I'd like to talk to you guys about this. Nothing personal. It's nothing.
I know you got two phone lines.
You have a private email.
It's because I have a string, Carl.
Phone line. My bills are half as much, but my service stinks twice as bad. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
you did. With such enthusiasm from the chairman.
Yeah. Hearing none, nothing.
Okay. Favor high.
Yeah.
I make a motion to adjourn.
You already did.
No.